You're listening to the Pulse of the Eastern Townships on CGMQ 88.9 FM, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative. I'm William Crooks. On today's show, we start with the cyber attack that led the Eastern Township School Board to shut down its computer network on December 18th after the intrusion was traced to a Russian source. I spoke that day with ETSB Chair Michael Murray. Then we turned to the Christmas bird count, which took place on December 20th, and what it reveals about bird populations in the Eastern Townships with Gary McCormick of the St. Francis Valley Naturalist Club. This is the Pulse of the Eastern Townships on CGMQ 88.9 FM, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative. Last Thursday, December 18th, the Eastern Township School Board shut down its computer network after detecting a cyber attack that was later traced to a Russian source. Schools remained open, and board officials say no personal student or employee data was breached, but the incident caused widespread disruption to administrative systems across the network. I spoke that afternoon with ETSB Chair Michael Murray, who explains how the attack was detected, why the network was shut down so quickly, what systems were affected, and why school boards are increasingly targeted by international cyber criminals. Here's that interview. How did this cyber attack unfold, Mr. Murray?
Well, I think everybody across the network found out at the same time when the IT department shut everything down as a protective or defensive measure when they detected an intrusion. And that was sometime before 9 this morning. They detected that there was, I don't know what to call it, but a hack is the general term, but there's probably a more specific term. There was a hack that somebody was in some unauthorized person or persons were in the system. So the reaction was immediately shut down the system, and that's when the notifications started going out to the schools to say that it was a deliberate shutdown. Our IT department contacted the department in the ministry is responsible for cyber protection or defensive measures, and have been working with them all day first of all, to isolate different parts of the system and analyze whether or not there was any intrusion into those parts. You know, we have a lot of personal information about students and families and personnel and so forth, but as late as this afternoon, we were able to determine that the software that relates to student identities and any information about them or their families was not hacked. Our servers were attacked, but the files that were accessible were not would be innocuous in terms of content. And we're fortunate that the system that we have, our student content is on our server, but the students use Chromebooks, and the Chromebooks can't be attacked in that way. So by late afternoon or by mid-afternoon, we were able to isolate and identify which computer the attack had come through. They had to come through one of our computers to get into the system. So they've been able to isolate enough to identify the actual unit that had been the origin. And what we've done, it's an interesting thing. Since the Chromebooks have no files on them, no hard drive, they are virtually unhackable. The hack was not able to penetrate any of the Apple computers. So all of our teachers, all of our commissioners, and several of our administrators, senior administrators, are on Apple computers. And so safe. It was the administrative computers, the PCs that were vulnerable. And so the order has been issued for anyone who is a PC user, has a PC access on the school board system, to leave them shut down. Shut them down if they hadn't already been. Leave them shut down until we can ensure that each one of them, and I guess this is what is the next process, each one of them is clear of malware. So that will take, they're telling me, days, possibly weeks, to delouse each and every one of the units.
How disruptive will this be to day-to-day school operations?
Well, we don't have to shut down the schools, but it will be very inconvenient. Happily, tomorrow is the last day before Christmas break. And typically, on the last day before Christmas break, certainly in the elementary school, it's not a high-intensity working day. It's a Christmas party day. So the high schools this week, some of the high schools are running or exams are being done, and that may disrupt any exams that were planned for tomorrow. But otherwise, would be in the process of winding down for the holidays, and we're certainly hoping that by the time teachers and students come back in January, that the system will be clean.
You said you're working in tandem with some kind of cyber defense Quebec force. Do you call the police when this happens? Give me the steps you take when a hack is detected.
No, we don't call the police. For a couple of reasons, the Quebec government has a department devoted to cybersecurity. They advise our own IT department on all the measures that we take and that we're required to maintain to ensure that cybersecurity measures are up to date. So I'm just going to my computer here to look at my inbox because I'm one of the fortunate ones who has a Mac, COCD, Centre Gouvernemental de Cyber Défense. And so since around 9 o'clock, we've had their support or their input on how to deal with this. And we can say, the main concern we have is for all private information. That has not been hacked. There remains only, as I said, the long and tedious process of debugging or making sure that each device that we put back into the system is free of any malicious software.
Why would a malicious organization attempt to do this? What's in it for them?
Understand that... what happens in these cases, why they would attack a public institution like a school board, is the personal information that we have. We have the names, addresses, phone numbers of students and their parents, and we have information on all our employees, all of the human resources files on employees, who works, how much they're paid, where they're pay is deposited, all kinds of information that could be used to and combined with other information from different sources, so to hack people's financial records or to otherwise do malicious things. And as I understand it, there is an entire black market where this information is bought and sold. So the motivation of the actual attacker, somebody in Russia, probably isn't to do anybody any harm themselves, but rather to get information that would be saleable on the black market.
Okay, so the attack came from Russia.
I have been told that it's been tracked down to a Russian source.
Right, so I suppose if they get into the right file or right folder in one fell swoop, they can gather a bunch of valuable information.
Exactly. What they would like to do would be pick up all of the personal information in a category, like employees, boom, 1,200 pieces of information that contain a lot of information, the HR files, but they're well protected, and as are the student files. So the hackers didn't get beyond our server, and the servers are where student work is stored, but not with any other personal information. So very little use at it, and we believe that comfortably in advance of any serious data loss, data breach.
Anything else people need to know?
Well, it's certainly a benefit to us that we have a mixed system. So our students can still go online, and it's only really the administrative network that is seriously inconvenienced. We shut down the whole system today, and we'll probably keep it shut down tomorrow, just to make sure that there aren't any inadvertent leaks. We were fortunate we were early, and that we have a mixed system so that we can say to students and to teachers, go home, have a good holiday, and use your computers as you normally would. There is no problem with accessing your email, or in other words, your computers are not compromised, not infected with anything. And we can concentrate on just the administrative computers, but as I said, the process may be long and arduous to clean, to make sure that each individual unit is clean and no threat.
This situation is not 100% preventable, is it?
No, exactly. It is not 100% preventable. But I think what we do have is a layered defense where it's much harder to get into certain parts of our system than it is other parts. So we have to have easy access for students and teachers to do their work and that sort of thing. So our servers are somewhat vulnerable. If somebody using the system clicks on an attachment to an email that contains the malware, it gets into the system. If it gets into the system, it's in that particular computer, and then it's an issue of how quickly it spreads versus how quickly we're able to detect its presence and shut down the system to stop it spreading further. It's kind of like pulling the plug. You know, when you shut down the system, it stops regenerating whatever malicious software is there, and it stops and basically sending out the information that the hackers are after.
That was Michael Murray, chair of the Eastern Township School Board, speaking with me on December 18th about the cyber attack that prompted the board to shut down its network as a precautionary measure. At the time of the interview, ETSB officials said sensitive student and employee data had not been compromised, and that cleanup of the affected administrative systems could take days or even weeks. The board has been working closely with Quebec Centre Gouvernemental de Cyber Defense and has said further updates will be provided as systems are brought back online. You're listening to the Pulse of the Eastern Townships on CJMQ 88.9 FM with support from the Local Journalism Initiative. I'm William Crooks. Thanks for listening and stay tuned. You're listening to the Pulse of the Eastern Townships on CJMQ 88.9 FM, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative. Earlier this weekend, on December 20th, volunteers across the Sherbrooke-Lennoxville area took part in the annual Christmas Bird Count. In this interview, I spoke with Gary McCormick, Vice President of the St. Francis Valley Naturalist Club, about the count, its history, and what it continues to reveal about bird populations in the eastern townships.
Hello, my name is Gary McCormick, and I'm Vice President of the St. Francis Valley Naturalist Club, which is a long-standing club here in the center of the heart of the townships here in Lennoxville and Sherbrooke area. And we have been, since 1953, conducting the Audubon Bird Count for this area. The Audubon Bird Count began in 1900 down in the States, and it's where a lot of amateur bird watchers, ornithologists and that, will go out in a given circle in the area, and this circle surrounds Lennoxville. And we just go out and count as many birds, as many species, and as many individuals as possible within that 24-hour period.
And this was all started as an alternative to shooting birds, right?
That's right. Now, let me see if I've got this right. Originally, people that were studying birds and counting birds would go out and shoot the birds. And that's how they would count them and identify them. This was done, I guess, in the States in the 19th century. And apparently, some people thought it better just to observe and count the birds. And so the Audubon Society began in 1900 to start these bird counts. And they have been successful. They are all over the Americas now, and I think, I don't know how, if they're all over the world, but they're very popular and they're growing. And, even in the townships in the last year, I guess there are at least five circles that have that are active this winter to do the bird counts.
Where precisely around Lennoxville will you do this count?
Well, it depends. Now, we conduct the count in collaboration with the SLO, the Sherbrooke Ornithological Club. So since the 1980s, they've joined us and they've helped us out counting the birds in this this circle that is basically goes from North Hadley, Waterville, Lennoxville, of course, most of Sherbrooke and Rock Forest and areas like that. And we divide the area up into different zones, different areas. We break up into teams and we cover as much of the area as possible. So, and then at the end of the day, at the end of the count, we have a supper. We have a get together with the two clubs, and we just roll over the birds that we've seen in the day. I compile the data that we collect, and I submit it to the Audubon people, and they create a large database of observations throughout North America during the Christmas bird count period. Now, that Christmas bird count period extends from December 14th to January 6th this year, I believe. Maybe the 5th, but I think it's the 6th. And they're not all held on the same day. The Lennoxville one is held on Saturday the 20th, December, but Georgeville, which is another long-standing bird count circle, has their count on the 2nd of January. And Cowansville, I believe, is on the 4th. So the various sites around the townships are different days at different times.
Are you just going to stick to the Lennoxville-Sherbrooke area?
I usually don't, because I have enough to do with my own circle, but other people do. Other people are free to if there's room for them in the circle, and that oftentimes there is a need for people. The Sherbrooke area, we've been very lucky. We get a lot of support. Last year, we had 86 participants, which I believe made us the second largest circle in Quebec after Montreal. This year, I expect we'll have about that number as well.
Well, people within the circle are also free to watch their feeders and send in their results by their feeder counts as well. But generally, it's the results. The important results are from the field trips, the people that go out into the field.
Why do it in the winter? Do you want to avoid counting birds that go south?
That is a good question. I don't know the answer to that question, except to say that I think it may be something to do. Maybe it's historical in the sense that they had done the old counts in the 19th century. They did it at Christmas time, and it was just something to do over the holidays, over Christmas. The Christmas bird count, of course, doesn't count a lot of our nesting birds, our breeding birds that come up in the spring and that, but these are the birds that are here. A lot of them are here with us most of the year. So to answer your question, I'm not 100% sure, but I think it's just something. We do have counts in the spring as well, as you may be aware of, the great birding day, things like that. We do have counts at different times of the year, but the Christmas bird count is the oldest example of a citizen science, starting, like I said, 125 years ago. Like I said, we've been doing it consistently now since 1957. So we've been doing it for about our 69th year. I think we've done it 70 years because we did it first in 1953. And as I said, our partners and our friends at SLO in Sherbrooke have joined us and helped us out since the mid-80s, I believe.
If someone's interested in joining in the future, what can they expect to happen on counting day?
Well, they usually, if they wanted to join, they would have to register with me. You can do it through the club. You can do it through the website. There's the Bird Studies Canada or Birds Canada website. You can just type in Bird Count Canada, and you'd find a place to register with your local circle, through the closest circle you have. What you could expect to do is that you would be dependent. Generally, we team people up with other teams, more experienced birders to begin with. And they would join, a team, and they would cover a given area within the circle.
An experienced person needs to be there to know what these birds are.
Yeah, of course, the St. Francis Valley Naturalist Club has a lot of experienced birders. So naturally, for instance, tomorrow I will be leading a group, and a couple of them will be newcomers. But they will come with me, and we will cover a familiar area. I'll be covering the Bishop's University area, that area. So I will take them, and they will. It's a learning experience for them, and it's also a chance for them to get out, get some fresh air, and take part in the study. And then, if they want to do it in the future, who knows? You know, they could get their own area, get their own section, and. Make their own team, I guess.
Are there any trends from last year that are affecting your expectations for this year?
Okay, well, the first thing I'll say is that every year has its own surprises and expectations either exceeded or not. But when you talk about trends, I can say overall it seems to be that we're getting a number of species tend to be going up over the last, few decades. The reasons may be climate change. The reason may be, of course, that there are more birders out looking. You know, when you have 86 people going out within a 10-kilometer circle, and the more expertise we get, the more birds we tend to see. The birds have been going up. There have been, last year, we had 58 species. In the given day, that's 11,601 individual birds that we had seen. The year before, it was 64 species, and that was sort of our second highest we've ever had. We cover about the total coverage we did was 834 kilometers in total with all the groups that, walking and driving around. Every year there are surprises too. You have you never know if you're going to see an owl somewhere. You never know if there'll be a special hawk that shows up or a special number of different winter birds, finches that show up too. The trends, like I said, there are upward trends, but there are some surprising birds that have really gone up, like titmice, Carolina wrens, our turkeys. 35 years ago, how many turkeys did we see out in the fields? Well, now,
you go driving out there, especially in the winter, and you're pretty well guaranteed to see some turkeys somewhere in your travels. Goldfinches, cardinals have gone up, blue jays, the ducks and the geese. Again, that's dependent upon how open the rivers are. And I imagine that for this winter, the rivers will be pretty open, which means that you may see more golden eyes and mallards and mergansers. Woodpeckers, you know, you never know what you'll see. Pileated woodpeckers, they're increasing in numbers. And we even have some new birds, like the red-bellied woodpeckers, that I'm sure somebody will report in the course of the day. So you never know. There are always pleasant surprises. Sometimes we may see birds only once in 30 years. I remember back in 2001, I was talking with a birder. We were just in Waterville, and a red-headed woodpecker flew over our heads. That's the only time it's ever been recorded, but we saw it and got a picture. So, like I said, when you're asking about trends, well, the number of birds seem to be increasing due to either our expertise or the number of participants, or climate change. Our December temperatures have gone up in the last number of years. And during the 2020s, the mean December temperature, I just wrote this down yesterday, it's -3. In the 2010s, it was -5.9. So we've had mild winters recently. And that, of course, allows more birds to either remain or to survive over the winter. It's a lot of fun. And we get together at the end of the day and go over the birds that we've seen. It's a good way for camaraderie and communication between the various clubs, the two clubs here in Sherbrooke. So I've been compiling for about 10 years now, and I'm pretty much an old hand at collecting data. And we get to see interesting trends that seem to indicate, you know, that I'm sure are of value to the professional ornithologists of Yonge and Cornell and places like that who study these numbers. Every outing is a pleasant surprise. I'm hoping that the weather will be nice. That's one of the things that are unpredictable. I don't think we're going to be getting any precipitation tomorrow, but there's certainly a chance of ice, and that makes driving on some of our roads a little bit more of a challenge.
That was Gary McCormick of the St. Francis Valley Naturalist Club reflecting on the Christmas bird count held on December 20th and the role citizen science plays in tracking long-term changes in bird populations. You're listening to the Pulse of the Eastern Townships on CGMQ 88.9 FM with support from the Local Journalism Initiative. I'm William Crooks, and keep your finger on the pulse. Merry Christmas from the Pulse. Here's Ain't Misbehavin' with Jolly Old St. Nicholas.
Jolly old St. Nicholas, ring your ear this way. Don't you tell a single soul what I'm going to say. Christmas Eve is coming soon, now you dear old man. Whisper what you'll bring to me, tell me what you can. When the clock is striking 12, when I'm fast asleep, down the chimney broad and black, with your pack you'll creep. All the stockings you will find hanging in a row. Mine will be the shortest one, you'll be sure to know. Johnny wants a pair of skates, Susie wants a sled, Nelly wants a storybook, one she hasn't read. Now I think I'll leave to you what to give the rest. Choose for me, dear Santa Claus, you will know the best.